The Tom Woods Show, episode 2383.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, believing that the end of the world might be a bad thing that we should try to avoid is not a Russian talking point. But if we are going to avoid World War III, it's important for Americans to understand what's been left out of the CIA's narrative about Russia and Ukraine. Coming to the rescue here is my brand new free ebook, Your Facebook Friends Are Wrong About Ukraine. Pick it up at wrongaboutukraine.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. This week I used some new inputs, new combination of things to record the Tom Woods Show, and the result has included a few, well, minor audio glitches. Some of you may not even notice them, but I just wanted you to know that these episodes this week are the only ones that will have that problem. And starting next week, it'll be back to that glitch-free audio you've come to love on The Tom Woods Show. Hey everybody, welcome to The Tom Woods Show, episode 2383. Very glad to be joined by Perry Metzger, whom I got to know thanks to our friend Gene Epstein, who sends me guest recommendations that I do not always take. But in this case, the subject matter and the man have met. Perry Metzger is a CEO of an AI startup called Cylenic. He's also involved in fact, are you the creator or founder of Alliance for the Future, that DC nonprofit you mentioned?
Yeah.
Okay. We want to talk about artificial intelligence today. I want to try to talk about it at a level at which the educated layman can appreciate it. So I may ask things that seem incredibly dumb, but I feel like if I'm asking them, probably other people have these same sorts of questions. And you would describe yourself, I think, in general, as somebody who looks to this technology not with dread, but with a sense of promise for the future, correct?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's some of the most exciting stuff to happen since things like the telephone, the automobile, the internet, electricity, that sort of thing. It's a transformative technology.
So I think the extent to which most average people in their daily lives have had experience with AI can be boiled down to using it to generate works of art or using it, let's say, using a large language model like ChatGPT.
Not quite. I think that almost everyone has been using it every day for a while and not even thinking about it. For example, every time you use voice recognition with your phone,
that's true.
You're using AI. Every time you type a search request into Google, you don't realize it, but Google is using machine learning to try to make the search requests better and more effective. There's AI all over the place, all around you these days. If you have a car that's got something like adaptive cruise control, you've got AI in your car. If you've got a car that has the automatic windshield wipers that figure out based on a camera whether there's rain on the windshield or not, you're using AI there. You're using AI all over the place. You're just not thinking about it as AI.
I suppose when a platform like Amazon looks through my purchase history and makes recommendations on that basis, that's another example?
Of course. Yep. Yeah, that's all based on the same basic technologies.
Okay. So I know that you have, let's say, had some Twitter confrontations.
Yes.
And at one point, I think it might have been you, but I've heard a number of people say that much as they might like to take on what you call the doomer side of things in the AI debate, they say they can't find a coherent enough systematic statement of that position that they can really sink their teeth into. And yet that seems like that can't possibly be. Like, for instance, when we saw a petition being circulated about the need to temporarily put a halt to development. And then we saw, I'll say, an acquaintance of yours make the stronger argument that we need to shut the whole thing down, that it has a species civilization-ending potential.
Yes, it's going to kill all of us, and soon, or so these people say. I think the people listening on audio probably don't see how raised my eyebrows and how incredulous my face is. But yeah, I mean, there are people out there who have convinced themselves that all of us are going to die, We're all almost certainly going to die, and it's all going to happen soon. This is, of course, not a new point of view. I think you can find people with apocalyptic beliefs going back as far as written language, and they probably go back further than that, but we don't have records, right? Because you don't know what people were talking about before there was writing, but probably the end of the world was a major topic of conversation then too. There's a great line in Edward Gibbon's Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire to the effect that although predicting the end of the world is a longstanding tradition among people, it doesn't ever seem to actually happen. But yeah, there are people who think this is going to bring about the apocalypse, and they have reasons, and I can explain their reasons. I think their reasons are patently ridiculous.
Can I share a passage with you, and maybe you can respond to it? And I feel sure you've read this passage.
Okay.
And it reads as follows. It's a cautionary tale that unless we put serious effort into preparation for the development of this technology, the most likely outcome is AI that does not do what we want and does not care for us nor for sentient life in general. That kind of caring is something that could in principle be imbued into an AI, but we are not ready and do not currently know how. To visualize a hostile superhuman AI, don't imagine a lifeless, book-smart thinker dwelling inside the internet and sending ill-intentioned emails. Visualize an entire alien civilization thinking at millions of times human speeds, initially confined to computers, in a world of creatures that are, from its perspective, very stupid and very slow. A sufficiently intelligent AI won't stay confined to computers for long. In today's world, you can email DNA strings to laboratories that will produce proteins on demand, allowing an AI initially confined to the internet to build artificial life forms or bootstrap straight to post-biological molecular manufacturing.
Oh, that's got to be Eliezer Yudkowsky, because no one else has quite so much of a flair for the absurd. Yeah, I mean, that's a very carefully stated and intricately described science fiction scenario. There are lots of science fiction movies out there. Why not just describe Terminator or something like that? I mean, my reaction to that. So you can talk about all sorts of things that could happen, but in fact, most of them are not particularly likely. It's possible that this podcast will be interrupted because crazy people armed with machine guns break into the room that I'm in and kill me. I haven't spent a great deal of time welding steel plate onto the doors to make sure that, you know, we can finish the podcast. There are a number of hypotheticals in there. I'm not sure, and we could go through them one by one. There's this whole notion that an AI could very, very rapidly design new forms of biological life from scratch, get genome sequences synthesized. You know, you can't actually synthesize more than like 100 base pairs at a time these days, but technological limitations don't usually stop Eliezer's speculations. So I'm not particularly surprised at that one. Where do you want me to start in taking that apart? I mean, the whole thing is kind of ridiculous.
I'm sure it is ridiculous, but at the same time, I do run into a lot of well-meaning people who are concerned about that exact thing. And yes, and I know you could very easily say there are all kinds of bizarre scenarios we might come up with, and I would not think it a good use of my time to prepare for all of them. But this is something new. We are stepping into something. I mean, yes, I'll grant, of course, we have used AI quite a bit in the past, but I think something like a ChatGPT, for example, is qualitatively different.
It's qualitatively different, but it's also, you should also remember, however, still the ChatGPT is not a conscious entity.
Right.
When you're talking to ChatGPT, it very, very momentarily springs up, generates a sentence, and then shuts down, right? It has no continuing memory. If you talk to it about a conversation you had with it last week, it has no knowledge of it. If you talk to it about a conversation anyone else has had with it, it has no knowledge of it. If you talk with it about something that happened a few thousand words ago in your conversation, it doesn't remember it anymore. The other thing, though, to note, how to put this properly. So people have been experimenting with all sorts of really, really interesting AIs. And I think the thing that many of the doomers are worried about is they say things to the effect of, well, we've never had superhuman AIs before. We've never had things that are superhuman, except we have things that are superhuman all around us, right? Everyone is used to driving automobiles. Automobiles are superhuman, right? A human being could not run at 80 miles an hour for 6 hours, right? You can get in your car, you can drive for 6 hours at 80 miles an hour. It has superhuman capability. Airplanes have superhuman capability. Forklifts have superhuman capability. We're used to technologies that can do things we can't. What we aren't that used to is technologies that can do things that we can't, that do things that are intelligent, put air quotes around it. I won't try to define what intelligent is. But those aren't particularly more threatening either. For example, right now, there is a system that people, there are a number of systems people are using. DALL-E, Stable Diffusion. There's a commercial one that I actually subscribe to, and I'm trying to remember its name. It doesn't matter. These systems that'll generate pictures for you if you type in descriptions. And I have yet to type in a description of an image to one of these things to illustrate a blog post or what have you, and have the thing come back and say, you know, I'm tired of this damn job. It's the same thing all day long. I quit. Because it's not a conscious entity. It can do something superhuman, which is it can do something like painting an impressionist painting from scratch, where you tell it something like, I'd like an impressionist painting of a T-Rex in Paris in the wintertime, and it'll generate an impressionist painting of a T-Rex in Paris in the wintertime. But it's not actually conscious, right? It's something that's capable of doing something superhuman because a human being could not generate an image that fast. Even a very skilled painter would take quite a long period of time in order to do such an illustration. But it's not something that you have to worry about deciding to break out and kill you, right? It's a specialized system that can do something very interesting and very useful. And there are a lot more such systems that people are going to build. We're going to build self-driving cars, which are going to be an enormous boon to mankind. If I go to a nearby city and it takes me a couple of hours to drive, it'll be very, very nice to be able to sit back, relax, do some work, and leave the driving to the car, not to mention safer. Tens of thousands of people die every year in automobile accidents. And most of that is because of human error. And although the first self-driving cars will probably not be perfect, the technology will only get better with time. Unlike what's inside my head, which is probably not going to get much better with time, at least if I age the way most people do. There are people out there who are building all sorts of specialized systems. And ChatGPT is a very interesting sort of general system, but it doesn't have some sort of inbuilt desire given what it does to go off and kill mankind. I mean, I can explain what it does, right? It's a system that's been trained on a gigantic corpus of human writing, like all of the writing that can be downloaded off of the internet, basically. And it has learned through a very, very tortuous process, and I could get into the technological details, but I think most of your listeners wouldn't be interested. Or if they were interested, we wouldn't have time to get into it well enough. But it's been trained to predict what the next likely word in a sentence is, given paragraphs of previous sentences. And so ChatGPT has a sort of built-in drive or desire, which is to generate the next word. It doesn't have a desire to conquer the world or to get a better computer to live in or to kill all human beings because they irritate us. It's a system that has been trained to do a very specific task. All of the AI systems we're building are systems that have been trained to do particular, very specific tasks. And since we have not trained them to decide to go crazy and kill all human beings, given the way the technology works, they're not going to. The notion that these systems are inherently dangerous is based on a number of fundamental misunderstandings of how the technology works, combined with vivid imagination. On the other hand, I think that these technologies do have incredible potential for benefiting human beings. I mean, in the last few weeks, we've had a group that has used an AI to possibly find an antibiotic capable of attacking one particular kind of antibiotic-resistant bacteria. We have people who are now selling agricultural equipment that potentially is going to dramatically reduce the cost of food, that is robots based on artificial intelligence technologies. There are a couple of really, really interesting things people have built. There's a weeding robot people have built, which I think is one of the coolest things I have ever seen. It's a tractor that drives over your field and uses a huge number of cameras to stare down at growing plants in your field. And when it sees weeds, it uses a carbon dioxide laser to zap them and burn them. And you can run this thing over your field, and without having to spend money on pesticides, you can kill all of the weeds in the field. And in addition to the fact that there are crops that are not herbicide resistant, that you can't use herbicides with, and the fact that there are people, and I don't really agree with them, but never mind, there are people who really, really don't like the use of herbicides, there's the fact that using less material saves money. A company called Carbon Robotics is building that thing. There is a company called Tevel, which is making the first robot system for doing real harvesting of stone fruit and similar fruit and fruit trees. And it's the most amazing thing I've seen. It's a truck that drives between rows of fruit trees in your orchard, and it has a half dozen tethered quadcopters that look sort of like the quadcopters people use for photographing their house or zooming around and having fun with, but they're bigger and beefier, and they have electrical cables that connect them to the truck, and they go up into the trees, and they use cameras and computer vision to see which fruit is ripe and grab it with a little robot arm and pick it, and they weigh it in the air, judge what quality it is in the air, and put it in the correct bin according to weight and quality in the back of the truck. And the truck itself is autonomous, and so you can have one of these things rolling through your orchard, harvesting 24/7. This seems to be like a fantastic idea here. There are people who are working on applications in drug discovery. I recently had to deal with a workman, and everyone has this right now on their phone. If you've got either an iPhone or an Android phone, you have a translation app on it these days, either from Google or from Apple, or if you have an iPhone, you can have both. And this guy only spoke Brazilian Portuguese, who was doing a repair, and I needed to communicate with him. And I could speak into the phone, and it produced a really good translation that he could read, and he could speak into the phone and produce a really good translation. I could have pushed the button and had it read the translation, but you know, I read fast enough that it didn't seem worthwhile. Our lives are slowly being made better and better and better by these technologies. And so naturally, we have people who are terrified of them and talking about how they're going to kill everyone and we must stop them now. Because if we don't stop them now, we're all going to die, right? Going to kill everyone.
Well, let me say what I think is the source of most of the concern that, let's say, people who listen to my show would have. And maybe you can find some common ground or maybe understand where they're coming from. And so let me list a few of them. And I'm going to link on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/2383, to the article where I'm drawing this, because there are links to everything that I'm saying. Even it may sound preposterous, but there are links there and you can judge the links for yourself. The first thing would be the concern that, well, let's take all the data that the NSA would have gathered in the days of its dragnet spying. I mean, maybe it's still going
on. You mean now?
It's an enormous amount of information, so enormous
yes.
that it made it almost useless. It was so much.
Oh, yeah. There's terrible applications of this technology. Like you could, the NSA will be able to trawl through all the data it has and produce lovely customized dossiers on everyone. And if you ask it, who are all of Tom Woods's friends, because you want to do something terrible to Tom Woods, and where has Tom Woods been for the last 8 years and what have you? Yes. You can use this technology for that. Technologies are neutral, right? There are a lot of bad things people are going to be able to do with AI. They're vastly outweighed by the good things, but I mean, I can't think of a technology that doesn't have both sides on it. The invention of metalworking is one of the biggest boons that mankind ever had. It also made things like swords and guns and mass warfare possible. But yeah, I think that that particular concern that people will, that the NSA will trawl through the vast amounts of data they have and do bad things with it, it's a completely reasonable concern. There are a lot of bad applications of this technology, and it's not very hard to come up with them. What others do you have on your
list? I would think, for example, we know that governments are masters of propaganda, but we haven't seen anything until they get AI-powered recommendations for propaganda.
Sure. But you also at that point will be able to have AIs that analyze the propaganda that work for you and tell you what you might and might not want to pay attention to. And I've seen lots of people talk about this, and they usually think only of one side of it, right? I mean, at the moment, if you want to fact check some random news story that you're looking at, it's going to be an incredible pain in the neck. And once we have AI and we have an AI working for you, you can have an AI individually fact check every news article you read on your behalf, something you would never have the time to do right now. And you can own it and have it working for you and be reasonably assured that it's doing the right thing. There are people who talk about, well, social media is going to be flooded with bots spewing propaganda, but you can also use AIs to filter out all of the bots spewing propaganda. And there's an arms race in all of these sorts of technologies.
Yeah. Yeah, because what I was thinking about it myself was that states already are masters of propaganda. They have at their disposal all kinds of inputs from PR people and propaganda experts that the average person...
And they have huge budgets.
I beg your pardon?
And they have huge budgets.
Right. So this could be an equalizer, in other words.
Oh, yeah. I think that it's reasonable to worry about it, but it's also reasonable to think about how you might use the technology to try to improve the situation, which is something I've seen a lot of very one-sided discussions on this stuff. For example, I've seen lots and lots of people posting about, well, you know, if you've got good enough artificial intelligences, you could use them to design new diseases. Well, you probably could. You can also use the artificial intelligences to design new sorts of counters to diseases, new sorts of treatments. And probably that's going to outweigh the rest of it. As again, there's no end of bad uses people have for technologies. As soon as someone invented the automobile, they also invented the getaway car for bank robberies, right? People have all sorts of bad uses for almost any technology you can name. You can kill people with cars directly by running them over. You can also take people to the hospital fast enough that you can cure their heart attack in an amount of time that would never have been possible if a group of volunteers had had to carry someone 10 miles to the hospital, say, or use horses. There are pluses and minuses to all of these things. The thing that the catastrophists and doomers like doing is coming up correctly or incorrectly with disaster scenarios. And there are a lot of bad uses of this stuff. I'm legitimately worried about the idea that police forces will decide that it's a good idea to track where everyone is at all times inside of the towns they run. And in certain places like New York City, maybe they'll do it. It might be reasonable for people to be concerned about that sort of thing. But I think that the technology itself is neutral and can be used for all sorts of things, good and bad. As with any other technology, as with the internet itself, the internet means that our children can learn on Khan Academy and that they can read on Wikipedia about stuff that they would never have been able to find out without incredible amounts of effort before. And it also means that terrorists can send each other email. And a lot of this concern reminds me of the very early days of the internet, where you had catastrophists who spent a lot of their time talking about how terrorists and drug dealers and pornographers and other bad people would be the only people using the internet. And the thing that kind of destroyed that line of reasoning that a lot of people had, and I use the term reasoning, like kind of with air quotes around it again, the thing that destroyed that was within a few years, everyone was sending baby pictures to, you know, of their children to their parents. Everyone was doing their banking online. Everyone was buying, you know, doing their shopping online. And they realized that, in fact, the internet was not only a way of spreading dangerous information on how to build chemical weapons and child pornography, right? But of course, there really is such a thing as child pornography. You can abuse the internet. You can abuse any technology. And some of the things that people talk about as being bad applications of AI are perfectly real, but they're vastly outweighed by all of the other stuff we'll be able to do. I mean, in a few years, I mean, there's this thing in the education research literature that a lot of people have heard of called Bloom's Two Sigma Problem, which says that if you individually tutor children, they come out 2 standard deviations in achievement ahead of their peers. But of course, we do not have teaching staffs the same size as the number of children in the country, right? You can't individually tutor every child, but what if you could? What if you had AI-based tutors that helped all of the children in the country learn at their own pace, where they could ask questions continuously, where they were not learning at the same pace as everyone else? That would be fantastic, right? There are dozens and dozens and dozens of incredibly transformative applications of this technology. And there are also some really bad things people can do. And there are people who like focusing only on the bad things. And it's the same. I mean, we hear anti-technology propaganda all the time. People have been telling us since the dawn of time that technology is bad and will do terrible things to us. And there are people who legitimately believe it, and there are people who have a financial interest in trying to slow down the development of technology. The AI doomer movement is, as with most of these things, a combination of Baptists and bootleggers. There are people who have financial interests that AI threatens, or that open development of AI threatens, and who are quite supportive of the people who have crackpot ideas, because the people who have crackpot ideas carry water for them. You might as well go through some of your listeners' other concerns. And I bet a lot of them are probably legitimate, right?
Well, I think what it boils down to, and I will give specifics in a minute, but I think what it boils down to is this. You're right that over the course of history, people have warned about this or that wave of technology. And I am completely out of sympathy with those people. But at the same time, in the story about the boy who cried wolf, at the end, there is a wolf. There is ultimately a wolf. So it doesn't mean that every time you warn people, it's always wrong. Maybe we've reached a point where, according to the value judgments of some people, the benefits don't outweigh the risks. The risks of regimes being able to potentially read our minds or predict our behavior or know everything about us and track us more efficiently than ever. Maybe I'd rather drive my own car than live in that world.
First of all, no one is going to remotely read your mind. I mean, it's possible that we could build machines capable of doing that. But it's also possible that finally we'll have tools which can trawl all of the public information and find corrupt government officials with unprecedented efficiency. It's possible that we will, by the way, a lot of this is also up to us. And I should take a step back and say something about that there, right? I mean, we don't have to ban, are the only possibilities we've got here banning all AI or saying that it should be legal for the government to spy on all of us all of the time? Because if those are the only possibilities, we know what will happen, right? Which is it'll be a foregone conclusion that the government will spy on us all the time and we will ban only the good uses, right? This is the sort of thing that's happened consistently throughout history. I can give some terrible examples, right? So nuclear power, for example, where I think a couple of weeks ago we had the opening of the first nuclear power plant to ever be opened since the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, to ever be approved since the Nuclear Regulatory Commission came into existence. I think a few power plants were built after they came into existence that had been approved before they were formed in the early 70s. And so we have nuclear weapons out there, but not ubiquitous nuclear power, which would improve the economics of our society vastly. We have all sorts of situations where we're very, very scared of our shadow. And one of the results of that, for example, is that drug development in the United States and worldwide has come to a standstill. It's moving at a crawl because even though we have many, many promising treatments out there, we're extremely scared of testing them. And when we do test them, if they're not going to make hundreds of millions of dollars right off the bat, we can't even afford to do the FDA approval process for them. We have the capability here of creating a situation in which the government, which will always exempt itself from any sort of regulation, right? I can think of no circumstances in which the world's governments are going to restrict their own use of AI. It's just not going to happen. States do not restrict their own use of valuable technologies. So we could very well find ourselves in a situation where governments have unrestricted use of these technologies for terrible purposes, and where ordinary citizens don't have use of these technologies for good things. And that is one future we could create by being excessively paranoid or paranoid in the wrong ways, right? It is entirely possible that we could ban all the good uses and still have autonomous weapons systems and domestic espionage enabled by this sort of thing. I think that's a real nightmare scenario, a much more likely nightmare scenario than Eliezer Yudkowsky's notion that AIs are going to decide that they want to kill all of humanity and send off sequences with what money we don't know and how we don't know to biolabs to synthesize new horrible diseases. That doesn't seem like a very likely scenario. But the idea that we might scare ourselves into a situation where the NSA can still do terrible things and we don't get drug discovery with AIs, that seems like it's entirely possible.
Can you explain what the term AI alignment means?
Yes. So there is this notion among people like Eliezer Yudkowsky that artificial intelligences, when you create them, and by the way, we've disproved this by creating systems like GPT-4, right? Or ChatGPT or any of the rest of these. And I could go into details of why I think we've disproved that this is something to worry about in a minute if you want it. But Yudkowsky and some of his friends have this notion that AIs are inevitably going to have interests and desires and the ability to act on them. And so they want AIs to have interests and desires are aligned, which is to say, which are concordant with those of human beings or of civilization as a whole, which on its surface doesn't seem like such a bad thing to ask for, except for the fact that, and the reason for this is so that the AIs will not decide to eat us. It seems on its surface like it's not the craziest thing to want, but when you dig into the details of what they actually mean and where they got this idea from, et cetera, it starts seeming a little bit on the crazier side. I mean, there are a lot of people who are obsessed with this stuff at the moment. I argue pretty strongly that for the most part, what people refer to as AI alignment that anyone should care about is covered by trying to make products that people actually want to use. If you have a self-driving car that kills people who are driving the car or who are riding in the car, it's not a very good product. You know, ignore the fact that no one would let someone sell such a car and that no one would voluntarily sell such a car. If you sold such a car, people would very rapidly decide not to buy them, right? If you want to have a functioning product, it has to do what the users want. So self-driving cars have to not kill their inhabitants. If you have a question answering thing like ChatGPT, it has to responsively answer questions that people want answered and tell them approximately what they want to know, not offend them too much in the process, etc. Any product that you build has to more or less do what consumers would want out of it. So I'd argue that alignment is already kind of baked in to the decisions and engineering that people have around AIs. If something isn't aligned, no one is going to want to have it. A lot of the crazier scenarios go more or less like this, though, that at some point we're going to build a superhuman AI, like the first. I would argue we already sort of have superhuman AIs. They're just in narrow things. But that we will build an AI that is superhuman in all things that human beings can do, and that it will immediately decide on some sort of arbitrary and capricious goal, like, I don't know, paving the entire planet. The usual thing that people talk about is turning the entire universe into paperclips as an exemplar. And that because the thing is superhuman and much more powerful than human beings are and much smarter than human beings are, that it will immediately seize control of vast amounts of resources, build lots of copies of itself, and proceed to turn the entire universe into paperclips, and we won't be able to stop it because we won't be as smart as it is. It'll develop weaponry and other things capable of subjugating us so that it can turn the entire universe into paperclips. And the notion they often state is that in order to stop this, we have to make sure that the AI is aligned in advance. And I find the scenario they're going through and their arguments for it and the conclusions they draw from it kind of absurd and ridiculous. But that's like where people like Yudkowsky come from, that we will build a superhuman AI and that within hours or days, it will have conquered the world and proceed to turn it into paperclips. And that's why they, in particular, are obsessed with this notion of alignment. In the sense of trying to make products do what people want, I think alignment is reasonable. In the sense of worrying that we are going to create some sort of thing that's going to kill everyone on Earth in order to turn the entire mass of the planet into paperclips or everything in our solar system or in the galaxy into paperclips, that's the fact that we actually have to discuss it is sort of sad.
Hey, everybody, let me tell you about the upcoming Expat Money Summit, hosted by Expat Money Show host Mikkel Thorup and two-time Tom Woods Show guest. Mikkel has lived everywhere, visited everywhere. He knows everything there is to know about international relocation and a whole bunch of issues short of international relocation, like second passports or banking offshore or whatever it is you're interested in regarding the expat lifestyle. And this whole event, which, by the way, features me as a speaker, is free. It's taking place October 2nd through the 6th online. You can check it out at expatmoneysummit.com. It is the largest offshore event in the world, and confirmed speakers include Ron Paul, Doug Casey, Mark Faber, Jim Rogers, me, also international lawyers, offshore precious metals dealers, foreign real estate experts, and much, much more. So we're going to be talking about finding a safe place to live in the world, legally eliminating your tax bill so you're not funding war, international wealth protection, second passports, offshore banking, and much more. So check it out by getting your free ticket at expatmoneysummit.com. That's expatmoneysummit.com. Let me get your thoughts on, because we've talked about the extreme kind of predictions, but then there's this other group that says, or they purport to see the value in AI and that it can be a boon for mankind, but that what we need is a temporary halt and we need to do this, that, and the other thing, and then maybe we can revisit it. And there was a petition with a series of signatures.
Yes, there was.
What's the problem with that?
Well, first of all, what exactly are we going to learn with their six-month hiatus? And how exactly will they enforce this worldwide? And is the Chinese government going to stop doing its AI research during this 6 months? And why do we think a 6 months hiatus is going to help anything when the only way to learn how to make better AIs and AIs that do more of the sorts of things people want is to do the AI research rather than sitting around for 6 months and philosophizing? The notion of moratoria on such things, and this isn't the first time people have had arguments like this, right? When people started doing genetic engineering research in the 1970s, there were all of these Frankensteinian scenarios people had. And there was something called the Asilomar Conference, where initially people agreed that they were going to cripple their research in order to prevent doomsday scenarios from happening. And here it is, 40, almost 50 years later, and making drugs with genetic engineering technology is completely routine, and doing genetic engineering in the lab is so routine that undergraduates in college do it in biology classes in order to learn about genetics and cell biology and what have you. And nothing bad has happened. I mean, I suppose that in some sense, a six-month delay is not something that will harm mankind over the long term, but I think it's also not useful in any way. And the actual agenda of these people is mostly not to slow things for 6 months, but to try to stop the technology because of their paranoias of various kinds.
What about this problem? What about the deepfake problem, to the point where we could conceivably reach a moment at which we can't trust any media at all, and you could, in fact, even manufacture events that didn't occur?
That's already possible. And already, by the way, for those that don't know, you can go over to the website of a company called 11 Labs, give it a couple of minutes of anyone's voice you like, and it will, and a few minutes later, you can have, I don't know, you can have Joe Biden reading the Gettysburg Address or the script from a porn movie or anything else you want, or Donald Trump, or, you know, pick the person you want to do this with. There was a point where I think Elon Musk posted a video that someone had created of him on Rogan, along with a couple of other people talking about their OnlyFans accounts. And it was pretty funny. But that sort of thing is here today. It is absolutely the case right now that you cannot trust today already that media hasn't been deepfaked. And we will also use AIs in the future to help us checking the provenance of things and figuring out whether they have been deepfaked, etc. But yeah, I mean, not only is this true, but it is true today. And how will you stop it? And if you try to stop it the wrong way, you're going to get rid of the only tools we have in order to be able to get trust in things that we're looking at again. So yeah, I mean, it's an absolutely legitimate concern. And I have warned elderly relatives not to trust video that they see and not to necessarily trust that when they have a phone call from a very nice man who wants them to give them their credit card number, that maybe they should be a little bit suspicious of that, even if the person no longer sounds like they're from a call center in South Asia, but now sound like they're from a call center in South Dakota. Yes, legitimate concerns, but I don't know what we're going to do about this by deciding to give up the technology. Again, there were people who were worried, what if people distribute child pornography over the internet? And people do, right? Is that a reason to give up the internet? Probably not. It's probably a reason to come up with ways to catch child pornographers instead. But, you know, moving on.
Well, likewise, let's assume that I'm not saying necessarily that the technology needs to be abandoned in some way, even if that were possible, but rather how best to cope with the disruptions it will bring. And in this segment, I'm thinking more like employment. Now, I'm well aware of the fallacies involved in, well, if we have self-driving cars, then what will the taxi drivers do for a living?
Well, the rump of labor fallacy. Yeah, yeah.
Right. And not to mention, sometimes I say, suppose we were born into a world in which we could, just by thinking about it, be instantaneously transported here and there. We wouldn't say, this is a terrible world. I wish I had to use a vehicle to get from here to there. Like, we wouldn't think that'd be a great world. And so to the extent that technology gets us toward that world, that's not a problem. But my question is, how do we envision dealing with a situation in which not just the taxi drivers, but a lot of the artists, frankly, the lawyers even, the doctors, I mean, we could go on down the list. Entire professions will be decimated. It's not that there will be nothing.
I don't think they'll be decimated. I think there will be displacements. I mean, I can give you some for instances. Okay, so I have a blog mostly about AI, and I have been putting custom illustrations, which look really, really nice, and they come from Midjourney, which is the name of the service that I couldn't remember before, which I pay a small amount of money to every month. And I never would have hired an artist to illustrate my blog posts before, right? I couldn't have afforded it. It would have been nice to do, but I had no capacity to do that. What happens when we lower the cost of lots of things? We usually don't unemploy people. We usually make things more abundant, right? We call it the lump of labor fallacy because it's a fallacy, right? Right now, it takes, in some parts of the United States, it can take months to see medical specialists. And when you see a medical specialist, it's a harried, tired person who has too many people to talk to. And we can blame the AMA for this or talk about why this is at length. But wouldn't it be nice if we had AI augmentation and AI assistance for our doctors? I think doctors legitimately should want that. And there are, when it's not going to unemploy the doctors, it's going to increase access to healthcare. I think that's the case for most of these things, right? When we make things that were previously expensive and expensive, we open up vast new realms of uses for them that we never had before. And we're going to be doing that with all sorts of things in the not-that-distant future, thanks to AI. And yes, it's going to be disruptive. The internet was extremely disruptive. The development of telephones was disruptive. Cars were disruptive. Trains were disruptive. Mechanization on farms. It used to be that something like 90% of the population worked on farms because there was no other way to create all of the food needed for society. And now it's more than reversed. It's a couple percent of the population works in producing all the food we need. And that's been a good thing, right? And I've seen many people saying, no, you don't understand. This is qualitatively different. The AIs will be able to do absolutely everything better than human beings. Human beings will have nothing left to do. And I don't think that's actually true. But even if it were true, that doesn't mean everyone is suddenly going to starve to death. That probably means that everyone is going to live in an era of much greater abundance and luxury, which has been, by the way, the trend for many centuries now, right? I can eat fresh strawberries in January in the northern United States, and no king could have done such a thing 500 years ago, no matter how much Louis XIV might have wanted fresh strawberries in the middle of winter. He probably could not have gotten them. We all live incredibly good lives, and mostly what this is going to do is goose economic growth and mean that we all live far better lives. And yeah, I mean, there will probably be disruptions. People will have to learn to do different things for a living than they do now. People probably will not be driving taxis when there are self-driving cars. There will probably still be a role in the world for artists, but suddenly there's going to be a whole lot more art. Hollywood is probably going to have a big disruption. It's probably going to cost only a couple $1 million to make an extremely special effects intense movie that costs $200 million now. And that's going to change the economics of everything because there suddenly are going to be hundreds of those things on the market where now there's only a dozen in a year. And it probably means each individual one will make much less money because people can only consume so much media. And it's not a tragedy, okay? It'll change people's lives overall for the better. It will probably mean that certain individual jobs will cease to be there or will cease to be interesting. It's going to be what the story of economic development has been like for the last few hundred years, probably sped up considerably. But consider on the other side, right? There are a lot of people in the United States who are intensely concerned about things like poverty and the fate of the poor and what have you. And the best and easiest way to help almost everyone in society, especially the poor, is to increase economic growth. And economic growth in the United States has been stalled at best at 2.5% and often lower for many, many years. And AI has the potential to suddenly give that a significant boost. What if we could increase economic growth robustly to 5%, 6%, 7% a year suddenly? And this doesn't sound exciting to many people, but I mean, if you're an economist, this is really exciting. It means in a generation, suddenly you're not a little bit wealthier, you're several times wealthier. And think of all of the things that that makes possible. AI is the most exciting development we have had in a very long time. And the reason it's so exciting is because almost all economic growth and technological development for the history of humanity has been stalled by the lack of human minds to do work. All right. One of the reasons that we live so much better now is the sheer size of our population means that there are far more engineers and far more designers and far more people working in factories and all of the rest of this stuff. We have expanded the division of labor vastly over the course of the centuries, partially by improving technology and partially just by having a lot of population growth. Suddenly, we're going to be in a position where we can do huge amounts of research, development, engineering work in general with AI, which suddenly means that a thing that has bound and limited economic growth for the entire history of humanity goes away. Suddenly, if you envision that you would like to build some sort of new electronic device, you'll be able to spin up a large number of engineering resources on computers instead of having to hire a large team, and you'll be able to do the work quickly, much, much more quickly than you could otherwise. If you want to do drug development, if you want to develop new computer systems, if you want to develop new farming equipment, robotics to build houses, robotics to clean or paint houses, you name it, mostly the things that humanity has wanted over the years have been slowed down and limited by the limited number of minds you can apply to any problem. Julian Simon referred to human minds as the ultimate resource in a wonderful book he called The Ultimate Resource. Suddenly, we're going to be able not to replace humanity, but to augment ourselves, to be able to achieve dreams that we've had faster and better than we've ever been able to before. And that means we may be able to see a massive increase in economic growth, a massive increase in wealth for everyone, everyone living longer, healthier, better lives. And I don't see the overall downside of this. And it's certainly going to be disruptive, but it's probably mostly going to be disruptive in a good way.
Well, this might be a tricky question to answer on the fly, but I am curious to know if you could describe for us how you envision the ordinary person's average day and how it would be different in an age where these technologies have been allowed to flourish fully.
If you were around in 1900 and someone asked you to describe the life of someone in 2023, you would have been utterly unable to. I mean, I have had this conversation with a few people, but you know, imagine someone has a time machine and sends back in time a newspaper article. Newspapers aren't even on paper anymore, mostly. But imagine that you specially print up a newspaper article describing how, say, some teenagers in Florida have gotten in trouble for sexting each other, and you send it back to someone in 1950, and they try reading it. Are they going to be able to make heads or tails of the story? I don't know what the life of ordinary people is going to be like. I would never, if you had asked me in 1990, will it be possible to build smartphone-sized devices with smartphone-sized capability by, call it, 2010? I would have told you yes. And if you had asked me to predict podcasts and Facebook and Twitter and people, I mean, we've had such gigantic cultural shifts. I mean, when I was a kid, people would call each other up without any warning. And now it's extremely rude. You text first. You send an email first before calling someone, because you don't want to interrupt their day. And it occurred to me not that long ago that before we had telephones, people simply showed up at each other's houses, right? You would call on someone. And if they weren't available, you know, you'd leave your calling card and go to your next appointment of the day. What will life be like for ordinary people? I haven't the foggiest clue. And anyone else who says that they do doesn't either. What I can tell you is people's lives will be much more comfortable, just as they have become much more comfortable over the last century. They will be much wealthier. Their life expectancy will be much longer. There will be more diseases that have been cured. Maybe the majority of diseases will have been cured. Maybe we will cure aging. I don't know. People will have much easier times getting from place to place because our transportation systems will be much more comfortable, much more convenient. Self-driving cars may be only the beginning. Maybe we'll be able to build inexpensive supersonic transport planes finally. Maybe there will be other things we don't even envision right now. I can't tell you. Predicting the future is really hard. What I can tell you is it's going to be good, right? I feel very confident of that. I feel very confident that there will be major changes, that people will inevitably grouse about all sorts of side effects, just as there are people who now, and perhaps with good reason, you know, get upset about the way teenagers, say, spend their days now, the way that versus the way they spent their days 50 or 100 years ago. When there are people who are, say, upset about internet pornography, and maybe internet pornography is bad for society and maybe it's good for society. And there will probably be both good and bad changes as we go into this thing. And it's going to be big. It's going to be some of the biggest set of changes our civilization has ever seen, maybe the biggest. But I feel very confident that things will be better, that people will be happier, that they will be richer, that they will be healthier, and that there will be lots and lots of people talking about how terrible it is and how much better it was before and not remembering what it was like. I mean, every time you watch a BBC costume drama about the early 19th century, they never show the outhouses or the chamber pots. They never make a big deal of the fact that there's no running water, there's no central heat, there's no air conditioning, that people, you know, I mean, people's lives were miserable, right? But we look back at the past with rose-colored glasses anyway and talk about how terrible things are now. Most people would probably run screaming if forced to live in the conditions that people had to live in 1820 for a few weeks. But there are lots of people who are nostalgic about it, you know, and make miniseries for television about it. And it looks so romantic and all of the candlelight is so beautiful. But it really sucked, right? People died routinely of diseases that we cure without a thought right now. You'd get scratched by a nail and you'd die, right? From an infection that took your whole arm. People died of childhood diseases. They died routinely of malnutrition. Like, we forget about the fact that, like, there used to be scourges across our society, like rickets. What was rickets? Rickets was that people didn't get enough vitamin D, right? And now you can get enough vitamin D without thinking about it because our food is fortified with the stuff. It is inevitably going to be the case that as this happens, people are going to talk about how terrible it is. And after the transition to a post-AI society, people will inevitably have costume dramas in which they have incredible nostalgia for the 1990s or 2000s or 2020s. And they'll depict them with, of course, all of the wrong sorts of things. And they'll never show someone dying of cancer in the hospital because they won't think about it, even if they've cured cancer at that point. It won't occur to them that it used to be a problem. And this is the way human beings are wired, right? But that doesn't mean we have to give in to the way people are wired. We can, in fact, force ourselves to look at this in a clear-eyed way and say, yeah, it's actually better to have cures for diseases than not to have them. It's actually better not to spend your... I mean, I'm sure there are people who are going to be really angry when there are self-driving cars and their job as a taxi driver was ended. But is it really great for a human being? Is it really a great use of a human mind to be guiding a car around all day long? Is that actually personally fulfilling? I mean, maybe for a few people. I think it'll be better for most people if, you know, machines are doing that. Anyway, I've been ranting too long. You should ask, you know, your last questions.
I am very sympathetic with the difficulty of predicting the future. We think about some of the futuristic predictions for what the year 2023 would be like. Well, so many of them revolve around everybody having a flying car, which is a frivolity.
I don't think it's a frivolity. I think it would be wonderful.
Compared to the internet, I would be happy to have my car drive on the road. And no one anticipated that. The Jetsons envisioned that you would sit in a seat with a screen on the wall and be able to talk to somebody. And this was an incredible thing. Whereas I can pick up this little thing and walk around and talk to somebody.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, cell phones are amazing. By the way, I mean, flying cars would be terrific, right? I mean, if you could commute 500 miles instead of commuting, you know, 30 miles, that would probably change a lot of things. Of course, a lot of people don't have to commute anymore thanks to the internet. But for the people that do, flying cars would be wonderful. Maybe AI will make it practical to construct them. People have ideas on how they could actually be practically built. Wouldn't it be nice if we had the engineering resources to apply to it? I'm not saying AI will bring us flying cars, but the things that I always think are crazy about the way that people think about the future and visions in the past of the future that have turned out to be completely incorrect is that they almost never get the overall picture right, and they almost never see developments in things like information technology and automation. And, you know, that's fine. I mean, I think that most people, when they think about the year 2100, they probably think about the present, except with people in somewhat more futuristic or different fashions. And if you look at most science fiction films, they kind of depict that. And we all know that that's not going to be the way things are. But that doesn't mean that we have a reason to be afraid of it. I suppose that that's the biggest message that I have about AI. AI is good for you. It's not a bad thing. It's going to make your life better. It might disrupt your job, but probably in the act of disrupting your job, it's probably going to make you so much wealthier than you were before that you won't care that much, or at least shouldn't. And I understand the human impulse towards believing in apocalyptic scenarios, but it's not a good thing to indulge in. And they're very rarely real.
Well, with that, is there a way people can follow what you're doing?
What I'm doing in particular, I have a blog on Substack called Diminished Capacity that is probably uninteresting to most people. Most of the posts on it recently have been about technical AI ideas. Alliance for the Future will have a website in probably around September 1st that will be worth looking at.
Okay.
That doesn't exist yet, but it will be at affuture.org, and look out for that. My company has a website that says nothing but we don't have any content yet, come back sometime, because we're still in stealth mode.
But you do have a Twitter account.
I do have a Twitter account, and I use it too much, and I've been trying to use it less recently so I can get more done. And, you know, and I'm Perry Metzger on Twitter, and it's probably pretty straightforward to figure out which one it, is me. I don't even think there are multiple Perry Metzgers on Twitter.
I'll link to it in this description and also at tomwoods.com/2383. I'll get it up there. One of the first things I did after we started emailing was I followed you on Twitter. And then I started reading your tweets and I thought, oh, this...
And you still invited me?
Juicy. And I still invited you. You should see my Twitter feed.
I have. Anyway, and I still agreed to appear on your show. Yes. Okay. Any other things that your viewers and listeners have been concerned about that we might address?
It's mostly the kinds of things that you've mentioned. So I will also link on the show notes page to those things. But I think you've conceded this and said that...
I don't think it's a concession. I think the thing to keep in mind is that the uses of technologies are sometimes bad, and it's useful sometimes to stop people from using things in a bad way. I have no objections to laws against using guns to murder people. I have no objections against laws against using cars to run people over, right? But I don't think that we should be banning cars. There are certainly going to be bad uses of AI. I think that they are in the minority, and people should be focused on addressing the bad uses as they come up, rather than on trying to stop a really, really useful technology in general that is going to make their life better. Imagine if we had treated the internet or electricity or cars or any of these things the way people are talking about treating AI right now. Imagine how much worse off our lives would be. And vastly. And it's hard to just think about it. I can barely remember what it was like before the internet or before cell phones. I mean, there used to be a time when you actually had to know where you were meeting your friend for dinner. You couldn't just figure it out at the last moment as you both converged, you know, in some section of town.
And then instantly know the diner's ratings of the various restaurants and what their different offerings are and their hours instantly.
Yeah, I mean, and I lived in that era. And we both lived in the era before cell phones, before smartphones, before the internet, et cetera. But it's hard to think about what it was like anymore because people get used to the new normal very fast. I think that'll be true for AI as well. Anyway.
I appreciate all this very much.
It's been very nice being on your show, Tom. And thank you so much for having me.
Perry Metzger, thanks for your time. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.